We now present the Bible for Today of the Air, heard each week at the same time and over the same station, sponsored by the Bible for Today Incorporated and the Dean Burgon Society with International Studios at 900 Park Avenue, Collingswood, New Jersey. This is Dr. D.A. Waite, Director of the Bible for Today, speaking. Welcome to weekly broadcast number 889. 889 weeks of weekly broadcasting, standing together with the Dean Burgon Society in defense of traditional Bible texts, including the traditional Masoretic Hebrew Old Testament text, the traditional received Greek New Testament text, and the traditional English text, the King James Bible. We're building Bible confidence. Confidence in the King James Bible, because the King James Bible is the Bible for today. The order phone number is 1-800-JOHN-10-9. For other things, please call us on a question and answer phone, 856-854-4452, or email bft@bibleforToday.org. Our website is bibleforToday.org. We'd like to hear from you. We'd like to get our book called Defending the King James Bible, now in its ninth printing, 350 pages, hardback edition. How to ask the bookstore to get Defending the King James Bible, or call us at 1-800-JOHN-10-9. Then have you ordered your Defined King James Bible, published with the Bible for Today? Uncommon words in the King James are defined accurately in the footnotes. It's deluxe, genuine leather. Says a 12-point large print, 10-point medium print, 51,000 are in print and distributed worldwide. Why not order yourself a copy and one for your friends? The Defined King James Bible. And we welcome now our audience from a shortwave all over the world. Those of you who have written to us, those of you who called us, those of you who sent letters and gifts, we appreciate that very much. Our shortwave people are on the air all over the world, in addition to our radio listeners here in the States by long wave. However, we're beginning a new topic today on the weekly broadcast, and it's called Samuel Tregellis, the man who made the critical text acceptable to Bible believers. This is a very important thing. This is a booklet by Dr. Jack Mormon, and it's available free and postpaid. It's a $5 value, including shipping. It's free and postpaid to those of you who call us or write us, either Bible for Today, Collingswood, New Jersey, or 1-800-JOHN-10-9. I'd like to have you to have it. Let me read the foreword. Beginning with the foreword, the author of this booklet, Dr. Jack Mormon, is one of God's choice servants. He labors in the United Kingdom as a missionary of the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. He is a Baptist pastor in the Greater London area in England. In addition to printing and distributing gospel tracts in London, he makes frequent visits in France and Belgium to distribute scripture portions there. He sees a great need for this in all of Latin Europe, namely Spain, Portugal, and Italy. Dr. Mormon is a prolific writer and scholarly writer as well. He's written a hardback book, for example, called Forever Settled, which was one of his first volumes. He has five other excellent books in defense of traditional Bible texts. And he also has a book on Bible chronology, The Two Great Divides. All of these are available from the Bible for Today and the Dean Burgon Society. Dr. Mormon serves as a valued member of the Dean Burgon Society's Executive Committee, and he's one of the missionaries supported by our church, the Bible for Today Baptist Church. Here's some of the conclusions that he writes in regard to Tregellis. It's important, my friends, to see the man who made the critical text acceptable to Bible believers. You wonder, why does the Bob Jones University accept this horrible critical text? Why does the Detroit Baptist Seminary, accept this horrible critical text? Why do the people over there in Maranatha Baptist Bible College, or Calvary Baptist Seminary, or Central Seminary, why do these fundamentalists accept the critical text? These are Bible-believing people. And the reason is Samuel Tregellis. And this is what Dr. Mormon says in his conclusion. Listen to what he writes. When we inquire as to why the Bible colleges of fundamentalism so readily accepted the Aleph and B text, that is, the Sinai and the Vatican text, certainly Darby, Bullinger, and Schofield, and from a different line, Hodge and Warfield, were all influential. Let me pause right there. Certainly they were. They accepted the critical text, the Aleph and B, Sinai and Vatican Sinai text, the Westcott and Hortat text. They were influential. But notice he continues. Dr. Mormon continues, there is no doubt, however, that the man most responsible for inspiring these and kindling a perverse textual fire within fundamentalism was S.P. Tregellis, T-R-E-G-E-L-L-E-S. He, more than any other, gave an acceptable face to the critical text and opened the door for its acceptance among the ranks of Bible believers. Regarding his legacy, we can only wonder at how great a matter a little fire kindleth. End of quote, Dr. Jack Mormon's conclusion. Well, in the battle for the King James Bible, I'm reading it forward now, and its underlying Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek words, it is hoped that this missing piece of history will be used greatly by the Lord. And we trust this will be the case. Let's look at the table of contents for this little booklet. It's a small booklet. It's a small booklet. It only has 12 pages all together in booklet form. Put the foreword, the publisher's data, the table of contents, the background. Now the critical text, page 2, the critical text is welcomed into fundamentalism. Welcomed into fundamentalism. And then the next section on page 3, the influence of Samuel P. Tregellis. And then page 6, the Trinitarian Bible Society wavers for a while. And then page 9, we take up the single sheet of paper philosophy. The single sheet of paper philosophy. And page 10, the Scofield Bible and the critical text. And then finally, on page 12, the conclusion. Now let's take a look at the background. On page 1, published in 1881, the Westcott-Hort Greek text, based on manuscripts Aleph and B, soon replaced the received text in universities, Greek departments of Bible colleges, and Bible Society translation work. This was a tidal wave. Let me pause right there. A tremendous shock for the Bible-believing world when they threw away the received text of the New Testament and substituted for it in 1881 this Westcott and Hort text, which leaned, and it still leans in the Nestle Allen text, it still leans in the United Bible Society text on the horrendous manuscripts of Vatican and Sinai, the B and Aleph manuscripts. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says, with few exceptions, the new text and its subsequent Nestle editions swept through the hallways of learning on both sides of the Atlantic. Centers that were liberal or conservative, neo-orthodox or fundamentalist, all were affected. Yet remarkably, the authorized version itself remained dominant for the next 70 years in pulpit, pew, and private study. End of quote. Let me pause right there. Though they undermined the Greek text of the King James Bible, and Dr. Mormon has written an excellent study, hundreds and hundreds of hours of study, over 500 large pages, in which he cites chapter and verse for over 8,000 differences in the Greek text of our King James Bible and the text that underlies the modern versions, New American Standard, New International, Revised Standard, and so on. And yet, they could keep the King James Bible. I consider it to be somewhat of hypocrisy. To undermine in 8,000 places the Greek text of the King James Bible, and yet use the King James Bible in the chapel services and some of the classrooms, that's not cricket. That's a divided house. That's something that is strange. Because what you're saying to the students of the Greek class that has 8,000 differences in the Greek class they use, with the Greek underlying the King James Bible, that's telling the Greek students, don't use the King James Bible and don't use the text that underlies it. And yet, Bob Jones University is this very same situation. They throw out the text that underlies the King James Bible, the Greek text, the received words, text receptus words. They replace those words with the Westcott and Hort B and Aleph readings at 8,000 different places. Some of them are minor, yes, but many of them are major. And yet they use, in a hypocritical fashion, I believe, in chapel, the King James Bible. But the Greek class throws out 8,000 words and differences with the King James Greek New Testament. Now, fancy that. The same as New Hampshire and Detroit Baptist Seminary, Calvary Baptist Seminary, Central Seminary, these fundamentalist schools, and of course the new evangelical schools, are more consistent than the fundamentalists. And the liberal, modernistic, and apostate, and Roman Catholic schools are more consistent than the fundamentalists. They wouldn't think of using the King James Bible in any way, in any of their courses. They throw the thing out. They use the New Testament English versions that go along with their false Greek texts that they teach in the schools. The Catholics, the Protestant liberals, the new evangelical liberals, new evangelical Christians, their schools use the critical text and some other version, New American Standard, New International, Revised Standard, or whatever. But not so with the fundamentalists. They are inconsistent. Bob Jones University, these big four, the leaders in fundamentalism, inconsistent on their Bible. They send mixed messages. Talk about flip-flops on a presidential campaign. Here you've got flip-flopping all over the place, mixed messages. They say with their chapel voice, we love the King James Bible, and we use it in our chapel. Isn't that sweet? And yet in the Greek class, we hate the King James Bible. We hate its Greek text. We want to undermine it in 8,000 places, and so we use the critical text, the Nestle Aland, the Westcott and Hort type of text, the United Bible Society text. This is inconsistent. They should either throw out the King James Bible in their chapel and use a critical text, New Testament, such as NASB or the NIV, and contain it and use it also in the Greek, or they should throw out the false Greek text, use the King James in the chapel, and use the text Receptus for Greek as well. Well, anyway, 70 years after they've thrown away, many of the liberals and conservatives thrown away the text Receptus, remarkably, the authorized version, says Dr. Mormon, itself remained dominant for the next 70 years in pulpit, pew, and private study. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says this. When one looks for a defining reason as to why so many accepted the new text, it will certainly not be found in the spiritual and biblical vitality of those who championed it. Unquote. Let me pause right there. We do not say that these people are spiritually without vitality to accept this critical text. Dr. Mormon isn't saying this. We're not saying they're less Christian, less believers, less saved people, less spiritual people that have accepted this false text. That's not what we're saying. That's not what he's saying. And they continue. Dr. Mormon says, the fathers of textual criticism prior to Westcott and Hort were influenced by the tide of rationalism spreading across Europe. The first casualty of this rationalism was not the doctrine of the Trinity or virgin birth or deity of Christ, but rather the scriptures themselves. End of quote. Now, what does this portend? What does this look at in the future, my friend, for fundamentalism? If it be true, and it is true, that the first thing to go in apostasy and apostate denominations was not the Trinity, not the virgin birth, not the deity of Christ, but the scriptures themselves, what does that mean for the fundamentalists today that have now altered the scriptures themselves? They have altered the Greek text of the New Testament. They have thrown out the received words, text receptus words, and for them substituted the false words of the Gnostic heretics of Alexandria, Egypt, the B and Aleph texts, the Vatican and Sinai texts, that are 8,000 differences from the received text that underlies the King James Bible. And once they've thrown out the Bible, the true Bible, the true scriptures, what will be next? It's a horrible prospect for fundamentalist schools, my friends. There's enough drift in the natural that is bad enough. But when you get natural drift to doctrinal drift, to scriptural drift, to bibliological drift, and the Bible issue itself, that exacerbates the other heresies that will come along in time. Throw out the right Bible, and you have doctrinal throwing out also one of these days. I predict these fundamental schools, just like they did in the rationalist empires as well. First the scriptures, then goes the other doctrines. Trinity, virgin birth, deity of Christ, and others. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says this. To these men, the printed editions of the received text and the Reformation translations, which had brought such inestimable blessing to Europe and the world, were corrupt and in urgent need of revision. End of quote. Not that they were corrupt, but in the minds of these who have this rationalist bent, they call them corrupt. They need revision. And to continue, Dr. Mormon says, the call went out to return to the text of the third and fourth centuries. Yet few stop to consider why the few remaining manuscripts from that period had lain so completely disguised or disused and ignored. Nor did it trouble them that these few relics were limited almost entirely to an Egyptian provenance or provision. End of quote. Let me pause right there in what Dr. Mormon has said. The call went out by the rationalists, the unbelievers. Use third and fourth century documents. That means B and Aleph. Just these few manuscripts. But they came from Egypt. They came from Gnosticism. They came from Alexandria, which was the seed and the seat and the seed bed of Gnosticism. Now, what is Gnosticism? Is that a good place for the scriptures to come from? Is that a good source for our Bibles, our New Testaments? Of course it is not. That's what's basically wrong with these false documents that are used by these fundamentalist schools. Bob Jones, Detroit Baptist, Central Baptist, Calvary Baptist, the others, the Maranatha Baptist Bible College in Wisconsin and Watertown, and of course Northland, and others, fundamental schools. Basically, it's wrong to accept these Egyptian Gnostic documents. What is Gnosticism? We have some materials on Gnosticism, if you're interested in reading them and getting them from our Bible for Today ministry. But basically, Gnosticism and the Gnostics, when they couldn't find their type of doctrines in the scriptures, the received text scriptures that we believe were the apostolic scriptures, when they couldn't find their doctrines in those scriptures, they changed the scriptures. Here a little, there a little, altering, adding, subtracting, taking out words, changing words. And these changed words to conform to the Gnostic documents and doctrines are the very changed words that we see in B and Aleph, the Vatican and Sinai manuscripts, which are the formational basis of the new versions. And what are the Gnostics again? They're heretical doctrines in their Gnostic system, such as the denial of the virgin birth of Christ, denial of his deity, denial of his miracles, denial of his bodily resurrection. These are Gnostic heresies, and these Gnostics of Egypt doctored those manuscripts. In fact, Eusebius, they say in history, was the one that was to make up 50 different Bibles or New Testaments and send them to the then emperor, Constantine. And so he did. And many believe that these, two of these, 50 that were sent to Constantine were B and Aleph, the Vatican Sinai. Handsomely dressed, beautifully gotten out, wonderfully acceptable, such as an emperor would pay huge amounts of money for receiving. And so we believe that's the case. And these Gnostic heretical manuscripts, sad to say, have been accepted. These Alexandria Egyptian manuscripts have been sadly accepted by fundamentalists, many of them throughout the world. We don't accept them, and there are many fundamentalists in this country and in the world that do not accept them either. Dr. Warman, and certainly in London, England, our missionary doesn't accept them either. Let me continue. Dr. Warman says, quote, one early means used to undermine confidence, that is in the text receptus, was the publication of polyglot Bibles. That is called right there, polyglot. That is many language Bibles, parallel Bibles. Here's this version. In this column is another version, and the other column another version, another version, another version. Polyglot Bibles. That's what began the means to undermine the confidence in the King James Bible's Greek text, the traditional text, the text receptus. Dr. Mormon continues. these multi-version publications demonstrated variations between the Textus Receptus and other forms of the text. Many were financed by the Catholic Church and became a kind of engine of war against what they called the paper pope of the Protestants. End of quote. Now notice this clause right there. The polyglot Bibles, more multi-language Bibles, to point out the Textus Receptus differences with these other Greek texts. And the Roman Catholic Church, as Dr. Mormon has stated, in large part financed these polyglot Bibles. And the reason was they wanted to get rid of what they called the paper pope of the Protestants, the Textus Receptus, the received text. Roman Catholicism has always despised the received words, the Textus Receptus words, the traditional words that underlie our King James Bible. They call it a paper pope, and they don't like it, and they finance these polyglot Bibles. That's what Dr. Mormon is saying here in this place. And to continue, Dr. Mormon says, quote, in fact, the spirit that was at work in the Counter-Reformation, that's the Roman Catholic Reformation, against the Protestant Reformation, the spirit that was at work in the Counter-Reformation, he says, was never far from the developing rationalism in Protestant ranks. Both joined to seek to overturn the Reformation Bibles. End of quote. Let me pause right there. Rationalism wanted to overthrow the Reformation Bibles. And also apostasy and Roman Catholicism wanted to overthrow the Reformation Bibles. And what is a Reformation Bible? A Reformation Bible, time of the Lutheran Reformation, 1516, 1517, along in there, those Bibles, all of those Bibles, were based upon the received text, the Textus Receptus, the traditional Greek text. And those were the Bibles that were being undermined and overturned by Rome and by the apostate Protestants. And they're overthrown to this day. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says, it must be kept in mind, though, that for Rome, the Aleph and B text, that is Vatican Sinai text of Westcott and Hort and Eberhard Nessel, was too radical even for them and something of a two-edged sword. While it could be used against the Protestant Bibles, it also cut against their own Latin Vulgate. Let me pause right there, end of quote. Now, the Latin Vulgate, though it departs from the Textus Receptus in many, many dangerous places, it does not depart as does the Westcott and Hort type of B and Aleph text. The reason is, I believe, because the Latin Vulgate was partly taken from B and Aleph, yes, by Jerome, in the 300 A.D.s, thereabouts, but also was partly taken from the Vetus Itala, the Old Latin, which is very close to the Textus Receptus. So he rode both horses, a little from the Old Latin, which is Textus Receptus, and a whole lot from B and Aleph, which is non-Textus Receptus. And so though the Latin Bible has many horrendous places, the Latin Vulgate, and I've seen those places. I've read the Latin Bibles, and I know some of the places where they're horrendous. They're false doctrines, like the Westcott and Hort text, false doctrines. 356 doctrines, they're not 356 places in the Latin Vulgate. I haven't counted the number of places. I perhaps should do that sometime. But instead of 356, there may be, say, 300 or maybe 250 that are false doctrines. But they have some that are conforming to the Textus Receptus. And the reason, as I said, was because Jerome used in the Latin Vulgate some of the Old Latin, the Vetus Itala. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says, officially, Rome did not sanction the critical text until about 1966 when the United Bible Society edition number 1 was published. And Carlo Martini joined the United Bible Society's editorial committee. Now, Carlo Martini, in 1966, he was a Roman Catholic cardinal. In fact, some believe he might be the next Pope of Rome. As soon as he joined the United Bible Society's text, which is basically Westcott and Hort text, which is basically B and Aleph text, as soon as he joined it in 1966, then the Roman Catholic Church joined with the Greek text of Westcott and Hort and B and Aleph. Let me continue. Since then, Cardinal Martini has served with five other editors in both the United Bible Society and the Nestle-Aland editions. And so here you have, in the five Protestant apostates, now you have one Roman Catholic cardinal on the editorial board of the United Bible Society text, the Nestle-Aland text, the text that is used at Bob Jones University in the Greek department, used in Detroit Baptist College, used in Central Seminary, used in Calvary Baptist Seminary, used in these other schools that are fundamentalist schools. And on the board of editorials is a Roman Catholic cardinal dictating to these fundamentalists what their Greek text should be. Now, if that is not a violation of fundamentalism and separationism, I don't know what is. Shame on these fundamentalist schools going along. It's bad enough that they use the words and the editorial words of five Protestant apostates that are Protestants, but to use in addition the one Roman Catholic cardinal to go along with that team, absolutely reprehensible. And they should forsake the horrendous false text of B and Aleph, Vatican, Sinai, Westcott and Hort, United Bible Society, Nestle-Aland, call it what you will, is virtually the same. Rebecca Mormon goes into these things. We appreciate his candor. We appreciate his help. We appreciate his assistance. Time's up for now. Remember the words of our Lord Jesus Christ in John 10:9. He said, I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved and shall go in and out and find pasture. Write us. Bible for Today, Collingswood, New Jersey. Call us on the order phone, 1-800-JOHN-10-9. Ask your bookstore for Defending the King James Bible and the Defiant King James Bible, or call 1-800-JOHN-10-9. Dr. D.A. Waite, signing off and reminding you, you can have confidence in the King James Bible because the King James Bible is the Bible for today. Well, my friends, we're going to continue this next broadcast next week, Lord willing. We hope you'll stay tuned. Remember, we've offered this free and postpaid $5 value, that's including postage, Samuel Tregellis, the man who made the critical text acceptable to Bible believers. We haven't got down into the details as yet. We'll get into that, Lord willing, next week. I want you to get it. I want you to see for yourselves who it was that made the critical text, the false text, acceptable to fundamental Bible-believing Christians. And his name is a Frenchman, Samuel Tregellis. He was a Plymouth Brethren. He was saved. He was born again. No question about that. And because he accepted this text, many Bible believers also accepted it as well. Shame on this situation, but that's the way it is. All right, we'll see you next broadcast, Lord willing. Same station, same time. Until then, so long. We'll now present the Bible for Today of the Air. Heard each week at the same time and over the same station, sponsored by the Bible for Today Incorporated and the Dean Burgon Society, with International Studios at 900 Park Avenue, Collingswood, New Jersey. This is Dr. D.A. Waite, Director of the Bible for Today, speaking. Welcome to weekly broadcast number 890. 890 weeks of weekly broadcasting, standing together with the Dean Burgon Society in defense of traditional Bible texts, including the traditional Greek New Testament text, and the traditional Old Testament Masoretic Hebrew text, and the traditional English text, the King James Bible. We're building Bible confidence. Confidence in the King James Bible, because the King James Bible is the Bible for today. The order phone number is 1-800-JOHN-10-9. For other things, please call us on a question and answer phone, 856-854-4452, or email bft@bibleforToday.org. Remember our website is BibleForToday.org. We'd like to hear from you, including our many listeners on shortwave all over the world. Get us on the email, Bible for Today, bft@bibletoday.org, or look at our website, bibletoday.org. If you'd like to hear from me, we'd like you to get our book called Defending the King James Bible. Now, on its ninth printing, 350 pages, hardback edition, I'd ask your bookstore to get Defending the King James Bible or call us at 1-800-JOHN-10-9. One of our shortwave listeners did that very thing this last week. And also, have you ordered your Defined King James Bible? He did that also. He ordered that as well. Published with the Bible for Today. Uncommon words in the King James are defined accurately in the footnotes. It's deluxe. Genuine leather, choice of 12-point large print, 10-point medium print, 51,000 are in print and distributed worldwide. Why not order yourself a copy and one for your friends? The Defined King James Bible. All right, we're continuing as we started last week. Samuel Tregellis, the man who made the critical text acceptable to Bible believers. It's written by Dr. Jack Mormon, one of our church's missionaries in London, England. It's yours for the asking. It's a $5 value, including postage paid, free and postpaid. Write us for Tregellis, the man who made the critical text acceptable to Bible believers. We'll send it to you free and postpaid upon request. All right, we're in the background of this book, and we're on page one still. Dr. Mormon says this, as follows, quote, conviction with regard to the Bible at hand, the Bible at hand, marks the chief difference between the men who produced early printed editions of the received text and the editors, past and present, of the critical text. Let me pause right there. See, these different editors that produced the text receptors or received text versus the editors that produces the critical text, there's conviction with regard to the Bible at hand marks the difference. See, the ones that have the text receptors that produced that, they believed that the Bible they had at hand was accurate, and they had great conviction regarding it. The ones that produce the critical text do not have conviction regarding the Bible at hand. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says, the former, that is the editors of the received text, knew that they were dealing with the providentially preserved words of God. The critical editors knew nothing of the kind. Nothing of the kind. They are forever seeking to recover the original text, while at the same time despairing that it will never be recovered. And of course, I notice that. The critical text people, they say, oh, we've got to restore it. Oh, this text receptus, this Greek text is horrible. We've got to restore, restore, restore. And yet they say, you can't recover it. They say it will never be recovered. And in fact, the man there at Bob Jones University, head of the ancient language department and on the staff of the Greek department as well, and in the Bible department, he's saying this, Samuel Schneider. He said, many of the scholars, and I think he's one of them, that say that the revision and accepting it and recovering of the original words of the New Testament is an ever-retreating mirage. It's an ever-retreating mirage. Now, notice something that continues to retreat, that means you don't have it. It's just like if you're trying to go to the moon or go to the sun and walk toward it, you never get there. And to have it ever-retreating means it gets farther and farther away from you as you approach it. And then the fact is, as an ever-retreating mirage, a mirage is something that's not real in the first place. So here they're seeking something that is not real, something that's impossible, and something that's ever retreating from them. I think that's a very good phrase. And they say it will never be recovered. My friend, I don't have to recover it. I have it. That's the difference between these fundamentalists and these new evangelicals and these liberal apostates, Protestants, and these Roman Catholic apostates as well. The difference between all of them and your speaker is, I believe, and Dr. Jack Mormon believes, we don't have to recover it, we have it. God has preserved for us His words of the Old Testament in keeping with His promise. The Hebrew and Aramaic words of the Old Testament have been preserved. The Greek words of the New Testament have been preserved. And the words that, where they've been preserved, the very words that underlie our King James Bible, Old Testament and New Testament. God has preserved those words. We don't have to try to seek them and recover some original text. We have it. All right, Dr. Mormon continues. An example of the uncertainty can be seen in the United Bible Society edition, where variant readings are given a likelihood rating of A, B, C, or D. End of quote. In other words, he's saying, here's proof. They don't know what the Bible is. They don't come down hard on this and that. They say, oh, it may be true. If it's an A rating, that's almost sure. What if it's a B reading? Well, not so sure. What if it's a C reading? Well, that's still not so sure. What if it's a D reading? Well, we really don't know about that one. Doubt is cast upon the words of God by these critical text worshipers. Sad indeed. Continue, Dr. Mormon says, in complete contrast, Edward F. Hills explains how belief in the Bible's preservation marked the labors of Textus Receptus editors Erasmus, Stephanus, and Beza. Let me quote from Dr. Edward Hills. He says this, as Dr. Mormon quotes from him. But in their actual editing and printing of the New Testament, that is, Erasmus, Stephens, and Beza, in the actual editing and printing of the New Testament, they were guided by the common faith in the received text. For in their appeal to the New Testament against the errors of the papacy and the Roman Catholic doctrinal system, these reformers were not introducing a novelty, but were falling back on a principle that long before the Reformation had been acknowledged by everyone. Dr. Hills continues, for centuries, it had been commonly believed that the currently received New Testament text, primarily the Greek text and secondarily the Latin text, was the true text, the true New Testament text, that had been preserved by God's special providence. It was out of this common faith, therefore, that the printed Textus Receptus were born through the editorial labors of Erasmus and his successors under the guiding hand of God. End of quote from Dr. Edward F. Hills. Now, this is a good background, a good history of how these men, the Reformation men in the Reformation text, believed they had the very words of the New Testament. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says, a God consciousness and reverence for the words of God governed the labors of these men. This will be found lacking in the editors of the Aleph and B, the Vatican Sinai text. Yet, as we will see, there was one very influential exception. An influential exception. Let me go to the next section. Dr. Mormon has this section on page 2. We're on page 2 of his booklet. It's yours for the asking. Simon Tregellis, the man who made the critical text acceptable to Bible believers. $5 value. Get it. Keep it. Read it. Get other copies. Pass it on. The section now is the critical text is welcomed into fundamentalism. How can that be? Welcomed into fundamentalism? Yes, yes, yes. Dr. Jack Mormon continues. The amount of disparity between the two texts was not generally appreciated. End of quote. Let me pause right there. The amount of disparity between these two texts is still not appreciated and not known. It takes a scholar like Dr. Jack Mormon from London, England, to show us in his large, over 500 large pages, the documentation that shows verse by verse, word by word, 8,000 plus differences. 8,000 plus differences in disparity between the two texts, the received text that underlies our King James Bible and the critical text, the B and Aleph, Vatican Sinai, Greek text of the Nestle-Aulin variety. Let me continue. The few people who did warn about this disparity between the two texts went largely unheard and unheeded. The rush to replace the received text was overwhelming. And most simply were swept along, and most simply were swept along and failed to read the fine print. End quote. And notice, this is in fundamentalism. The rush, the quickness to push for the received text was overwhelming. We continue. Dr. Mormon says, sound Bible colleges, while using the authorized version in chapel services, now he's talking about today, Bob Jones University, Detroit Baptist Seminary, Calvary Baptist Seminary, Central Seminary. I'm sure they probably use the King James Bible in their chapel. Let me just ask this question. Why do they use it in the chapel when they abuse it in their Greek class? Why do they use it in the chapel and abuse it in Greek class? My hunch, I don't know for sure, but I have a right to guess, don't I? My guess is that they have to retain the fine fundamentalist people throughout the world who are their contributors. They have to hold them in check and at bay, and they have to convince them that they're for the King James Bible. Look, we use it in our chapel. Send us your money. Send us your money. They never say in their advertisements, if you can find an advertisement of Bob Jones University, Detroit Baptist Seminary, Calvary Baptist Seminary, Central Seminary, if you can find an advertisement in their advertisements and appeal for funds to the constituency that they have thrown away the text that underlies the King James Bible, the Greek text, and have replaced it with a critical text in the Greek department, if you can find an advertisement to their contributors to that effect, please send it to me. Call me on the telephone. I want to see it. I want to have it. I don't believe it exists. It doesn't exist because they must lie to their contributors in a form of lying. These schools must, in a form of lying to their contributors, and pretend like they accept the King James Bible through and through, when in fact they do not. When in fact, like in Bob Jones University, they sell and push the New American Standard Version in their bookstores and in some of their classes. And in fact, when they push in their bookstore the English Standard Version, which is a revision of the National Council of Churches Revised Standard Version of the 1950s. And my friends, this is hype. This is hocus pocus to seem to tell the contributors we're standing for the King James Bible when they do not stand through and through for that Bible. To me, this is sham. Pardon me, I'm getting a little specific, but I don't do that. I don't tell you people that I'm for the King James Bible, and in my bookstore and other ways, I'm using the New American Standard or the Revised Standard or the NIV. I don't do that. I'm consistent, and I think everybody should be consistent. Take the stand for the King James Bible, yes, but take the stand for the Hebrew and Greek words that underlie that Bible as well. That's what we do, and we are consistent, and we believe those who are not consistent, something's wrong with them. And you ought not to patronize them. You ought not to give them money. You ought not to give them the students to confuse them and to tear them apart from the true text of the New Testament, the traditional Textus Receptus, and in fact, in addition, tearing them apart from the King James Bible. Well, it's a big sermon in itself, I guess, but let me continue. The rise of the Bible Institute movement, says Dr. Mormon, notably Philadelphia, they have Bible Institutes there, Moody, and the Bible Institute of Los Angeles, did much to establish a spiritual and dispensational fundamentalism in the early 1900s. End of quote. Let me pause right there. I agree. And I am a dispensationalist. I am a fundamentalist. I am a separatist. And I'm glad for the spiritual and dispensational fundamentalism emphasized in the Philadelphia College of Bible in the early days, and Moody Bible Institute, the Bible Institute of Los Angeles in the early days, the early 1900s. But my friend, this is no longer the 1900s, in case you hadn't looked at a calendar recently. This is the 2000s. This is the 2000s. Dr. Mormon goes on to say this in the next sentence, quote, "Yet, as their doors were opened to the new text, a great deal of the otherwise sound material they produced was seriously marred." End of quote. They had the great material for separation, for fundamentalism, for dispensational truth, for spiritual truth. But when they opened the doors, even the 1900 doors, when they opened up the doors to receive this 1881 Greek text, 1881 English Revised Version, and the text that underlies it, the Westcott-North text. When they opened those doors to accept them, then there's something else that was true. Something else was true. And that's, of course, necessary to understand that it was true. There was problems there, and they should understand it completely. They should not accept it. They should not have anything to do with it. They should doubt it and question it indeed. They opened the doors to this. Opened the doors to the false text these schools did, these Bible institutes, and of course these Bible institutes were good in many ways, but since they opened the doors to this other thing, there was a problem indeed. Let me continue. The doctrines were seriously marred, he says. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says this. The commentaries by William R. Newell are a typical example. In our own Bible Institute work, he was in the Bible Institute work there in South Africa before he went over to London, England. In our own Bible Institute work, realizing the spiritual depth of Newell's books, William R. Newell, we attempted to revise them back to an authorized version, Textus Receptus base. But the job was too great for us to complete. We were, with great difficulty, able to publish a limited edition of the Scofield Reference Bible without the text critical notes. Certainly, it would be very beneficial if a number of the important works from that era could be revised back to the authorized version. End of quote. Do you understand what I mean? Here are these men, spiritual men, with good books, William Newell and others, Scofield Bible and others, but they used the wrong Greek text. They threw out and scrapped the Textus Receptus. They fought with it. They changed it. They altered it. They said, this is wrong. The other is right. And that's what's sad about it. But the changes were so great and so devious and so important that Dr. Mormon threw up his hands. He couldn't really do a thorough job. There were so numerous changes from the true words of the living God, the English words in the King James Bible. Dr. Mormon continues, quote, while the rush to the revised text developed a momentum of its own, affecting both liberal and conservative, there were factors that eased the way for its entry into groups that were biblically sound. In other words, there was a momentum, but there are other factors. Here are some of them. He says this, quote, early 20th century American fundamentalism was influenced by a return to a literal interpretation of Bible prophecy that had become popular in the British Brethren movement. Notwithstanding some of their eccentricities, this group did the most to reestablish the literal and premillennial view. And let me pause right there. British Brethren movement. That's where the Plymouth Brethren movement began in Britain. And they were ones that established and helped a literal interpretation of Scripture, premillennialism, and so on. And that was good. And you see, he brings this in because Samuel Tregellis was a part of the British Brethren movement. He was a Plymouth Brethren. And that was the thing that he says they were very helpful in literal interpretation of Scripture, premillennialism, fundamentalism, separatism, and so on. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says, for this, we owe them, that is the Brethren movement, a great debt. Convictions concerning the blessed hope became a hallmark in fundamentalism on the American side of the Atlantic. Yet in textual matters, the Brethren were skating on thin ice, and that primarily because of one man. End of quote. Let me just pause right here. The Brethren movement, though that's a great debt we owe them for premillennialism and literal interpretation of Scripture and fundamentalism and so on, convictions on the blessed hope, that's great. But on textual matters, the Brethren were skating on thin ice, primarily because of one man. And the next section is going to tell about that one man, the influence of Samuel P. Tregellis. So before we get into that section, let me simply say this. I was talking with a man who was a Plymouth Brethren just this last week on the phone. He was asking me for materials and books and so on. And he says he's one of the Brethren. I said, yes, it's a sad thing, isn't it, how the Plymouth Brethren today are using all sorts of new versions because they've rejected the Textus Receptus. And many of the Brethren assemblies have rejected the King James Bible. Not all of them, but many of them. And the reason is the influence of this one man. Let's go to this influence of Samuel P. Tregellis, this next section. We're on page 3 now of our booklet. Here's for the asking, free and postpaid, $5 value. Simply write us or call us, 1-800-JOHN-10-9. Ask for the Tregellis book, Tregellis. All right, what about this influence of Samuel P. Tregellis? Dr. Mormon says this. There are very few exceptions to the rule that the primary movers of the critical text are and were firmly in the domain of theological liberalism. And let me pause right there. With very few exceptions, the primary movers of this false text were in the liberal theological realm. Westcott and Hort. We're not fundamentalists, even though a lot of the fundamentalists are saying they're conservatives, such as Bob Jones University says they're conservatives. Detroit Baptist, Central Baptist, different ones that try to point Westcott and Hort out as being conservatives. They're apostates. They're heretics. And I've written an entire book to show this, the theological heresies of Westcott and Hort. I quoted from 125 or so sections and words and passages from five of their books. And these and others were primarily under the domain of theological liberalism that accepted the Westcott and Hort false text of B&L. Primarily, with few exceptions. And they continue. Dr. Mormon says, Samuel Prado Tregellis is the notable exception. He is also exceptional in being able to point to a clear conversion experience. Born to Quaker parents in Falmouth, Cornwall, 1813, the young Tregellis was saved under the preaching of B.W. Newton on a visit to the Flourishing Brethren Assembly at Plymouth. Here's Plymouth, England. Here's where we get the expression, the Plymouth Brethren, from Plymouth, England. He was saved by the Lord about 1832. The truths of the Lord's second coming, both by way of tracts and preaching, played a major role in his salvation experience. This all led to a great deal of opposition from his family. And of course, now, just because a man is saved, does that mean the family's glad? No. Sometimes the family is sad, as we know. They don't want a saved member of their family. They do not want a person that's born again. And so, with Tregellis, the family opposed him. And they continue. Dr. Mormon says, unfortunately, unlike most brethren, Tregellis followed his mentor, Newton, in rejecting the pre-tribulation rapture. End of quote. Well, I am for the pre-tribulation rapture. I'm sorry that Tregellis rejected that. He followed Newton, who was against the pre-tribulation rapture. You say, what does pre-tribulation rapture mean? That means the Lord Jesus Christ will rapture and take out at the time of this event all the Bible-believing born-again Christians in this world before any part of Daniel's 70th week, which is a week of 7 years, the seven-year period of tribulation. That's called the pre-tribulation rapture, the rapture before any part of the tribulation takes place. I believe it's a good doctrine, it's a sound doctrine, it's a scriptural doctrine. I teach it and we preach it from our church and in writing as well in our books, in our commentaries on the scriptures. And we go on. Dr. Mormon says this, during these early years, while employed at an ironworks in South Wales, Tregellis taught himself Greek, Hebrew, Chaldaic, and Welsh in order to evangelize among the Welsh people. End of quote. Let me just simply say, I commend him for that. Here's a man that taught himself these languages. Didn't go to college, didn't go to seminary, taught himself. Largely self-taught. Now notice, Dr. Mormon continues, though largely self-taught, some have gone so far as to say that Tregellis, quote, Tregellis, was in fact the greatest biblical scholar of the 19th century, unquote. Well, that may be true, may not be true. But he was a man that's self-taught, and that's commendable. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says, the British government recognized his scholarship and gave a number of financial grants toward his work. Of him, it was also acknowledged, quote, this is a quote, seldom one finds the combination of a thorough scholar and a staunch evangelist, end of quote. So there was a combination. We're on page 4 now of the booklet, if you're getting one or follow along with us. Now, Dr. Mormon continues. When we inquire as to how a man like William R. Newell could be so sound and spiritual in his teaching ministry, could write the beloved hymn at Calvary with his opening line, years I spent in vanity and pride, caring not my Lord was crucified. And yet at the same time, to be so critical of the authorized version and received text. Why? Dr. Mormon says, we need look no further than the example set by Samuel Tregellis. Very early in his Christian walk, I would say before he knew better, he gave notice as to where he was heading, textually. And even at the age of 25, he announced his proposal for something. And here's what Tregellis, even at the young age of 25, said. The proposal for the formation of a text of the Scriptures on the authority of ancient copies without allowing the received text any prescriptive right. End of quote. My friends, it's one thing to talk about the authority of ancient copies. But when you don't realize that those ancient copies, B and Aleph copies, were polluted by the heretics and changed, then we ought to look differently upon those ancient copies. And that's what we do here. And we go with the received text that underlies our King James Bible. Time's up for now. Remember the words of our Lord Jesus Christ in John 10:9. He said, I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he should be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture. Write us. Bible for Today, Collinswood, New Jersey, or call us on the order phone, 1-800-JOHN-10-9. Ask your bookstore for Defending the King James Bible and the Defined King James Bible, or call us at 1-800-JOHN-10-9. Dr. D.A. Waite, signing off and reminding you, you can have confidence in the King James Bible because the King James Bible is the Bible for today. Well, I hope you'll stay tuned for next broadcast next week. We're going to continue talking about Samuel Tregellis, the man who made the critical text acceptable to Bible believers. You ought to get a copy of this free and postpaid for the asking, Bible for Today, Collinswood, New Jersey, or simply 1-800-JOHN-10-9, $5 value, yours for the asking, and read this. Time's up for now, and until next broadcast, same time, same station, until then, so long. We now present the Bible for Today of the Air. Heard each week at the same time and over the same station, sponsored by the Bible for Today Incorporated and the Dean Burgon Society, with international studios at 900 Park Avenue, Collingswood, New Jersey. This is Dr. D.A. Waite, director of the Bible for Today, speaking. Welcome to weekly broadcast number 891, 891 days, or rather weeks, of weekly broadcasting, standing together with the Dean Burgon Society in defense of traditional Bible texts, including the traditional Masoretic Hebrew Old Testament text, the traditional received Greek New Testament text, and the traditional English text, the King James Bible. We're building Bible confidence. Confidence in the King James Bible because the King James Bible is the Bible for today. The order phone number is 1-800-JOHN-10-9. For other things, please call us on a question at your phone, 856-854-4452, or email. Some of you listening on the shortwave may want to email us, bftbiblefortoday.org. And our website for all of you is bibleforttoday.org. We'd like to hear from you. We'd like you to get our book called Defending the King James Bible. Now in its ninth printing, 350 pages, hardback edition. I'd ask your bookstore to get Defending the King James Bible or call us at 1-800-JOHN-10-9. Then have you ordered your Defined King James Bible, published by the Bible for Today? Uncommon words in the King James are defined accurately in the footnotes. It's deluxe, genuine leather, not another Bible in the world like it. Choice of 12-point large print, 10-point medium print, 51,000 are in print and distributed worldwide. Why not order yourself a copy and one for your friends? All right, we're continuing this week this booklet, Samuel Tregellis, the man who made the critical text acceptable to Bible believers, by Dr. Jack Mormon, one of our church's missionaries in London, England. Very important book indeed. We're on page number 4. It's in the section called The Influence of Samuel P. Tregellis. This is yours, free and postpaid, $5 value. Just write us or call us, 1-800-JOHN-10-9. Ask for Tregellis, the man who made the critical text acceptable to believers. All right, on page 4, talking about Tregellis, he says, for the remainder, this is Dr. Jack Mormon, for the remainder of his life, Tregellis pursued this goal, that is, to have a text based upon ancient copies, that is, B and Aleph, Vatican Sinai, copies which were poisoned by the Gnostics of Alexandria, Egypt. And to continue, Dr. Mormon says, an insight into his exhaustive labors can be seen from the obituary given him by the Western Daily Mercury of Plymouth, that is, Plymouth, England, dated May the 3rd, 1870. 1975. Here's what they said in the obituary. Kitchendorf and Pergellis were alike in the great object of their life, and alike in the gigantic labors they undertook to give effect to it. The discoverer and publisher of one of the most ancient manuscripts of the Greek Testament known died last December, and by his death left Pergellis the unique occupant of the field. End of quote. Apparently Pergellis had, for Kitchendorf had died, and now Pergellis was left. End of quote. Well, Dr. Mormon continues. Nearly 20 years ago, an American writer thus noticed our lamented townsman's work and character. Here's what it says. Quote, Dr. Pergellis is emphatically the man who has lived for an idea. For more than a quarter of a century, he has been engaged with the most unwearied industry in the investigation of the Greek texts of the New Testament. He has ransacked almost every library of Europe where there is a fragment of a Greek manuscript. He has conversed and corresponded with the best critical scholars of the present generation, Schultz, DeWitt, Lachmann, Kitchendorf. End of quote. So this is simply telling that Rick Pergellis was a student in Greek, and he studied manuscripts and so on. As we said last broadcast, last week, he was a believer. He was a born-again Christian man, Pergellis, but he accepted the false text of Westcott and Hort. And because of his acceptance of this, this man made the critical text acceptable to Bible believers. Now, here's a quotation of interesting letters dated Hamburg, August 1st, 1850. Quote, in the spring of 1849, says he, Pergellis, I went to Paris. I collated D of the epistles once through and copied Baratucci's collation of the Vatican manuscript. That's manuscript B. All this was done with great difficulty, as I had been out of health for some time, with the exception of one day. I was quite unwell from the time I reached Paris. My work was cut short by a severe attack of cholera, and on the 9th of June, for some days, it seemed as though I were on the edge of the grave. End of quote. So this is a statement of how I went to Paris and copied some of the materials of Vatican manuscript and also collated manuscript D. All right, Dr. Mormon continues. It was Codex Vaticanus, that's the B manuscript, that most fired the imagination of Pergellis. For the critical edition he prepared, he had access to the imperfect collations of B by Baralazzi, 1669, Nico for Bentley, 1720, and Birch, 1788, but had hoped to be able to make his own collation. End of quote. Let me just simply say, a collation is a copying and a comparing of one manuscript with the other, see where the differences are, maybe the similarities, and so all he had was the imperfect collations of these three men, Bartolacci, Miko for Bentley, and Birch. Let me continue. On a trip in the late 1845, he spent 5 months at Rome in negotiations to be allowed to transcribe the Codex, that is, Codex B, the Vatican manuscript, but was not allowed to copy any part of it. He did gain permission to view the document and is said to have made an occasional note on his fingernails, end of quote. Now, let's remember, manuscript B, the Vatican manuscript, was locked up in the Vatican library. The Roman Catholic Church had complete control over it. They did not want anyone to copy it. They did not want anybody to look at it, to find out what it said. And for many years, it was secret. And this is why Pergellis had such a time to get in there. And he was not supposed to make any notes, and so apparently he made a few on his fingernails. Isn't that something? Instead of paper. They wouldn't let him have paper in there, apparently. Dr. Mormon continues. Of Vaticanus, that is the B manuscript of the Vatican, Pergellis said this, quote, in many respects, there is no manuscript of equal value in criticism, so that even though we are at times in doubt as to its readings, we are bound to prize highly what we do know. End of quote. Let me simply say this, as Dean Berghuis has pointed out very clearly. The B manuscript, the Vatican manuscript, is one of the worst that ever saw the light of day. And yet here Tregellis and Titchendorf and Westcott and Hort and others, Griesbach, they all have prized B of the Vatican manuscript very highly. Now, are they right or wrong? I believe that they're wrong, dead wrong. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says, Tregellis published his critical edition of the Greek New Testament in six parts between the years 1857 and 1872. Suffering a stroke in 1870, he was able to finish the final part with the assistance of his longtime friend and father in the faith, W.B. Newton. Among his sources, Tregellis lists some 33 manuscripts, Greek manuscripts, along with 15 from the Old Latin. He cites A, B, C, and D, but not Aleph, which was the Sinai manuscript, which was not available at the time of publication. Clearly, the edition rests heavily upon Vaticanus, that's the Vatican manuscript, and did much to give to pave the way for the Aleph and B text of Westcott and Hort. In fact, Hort became editor of the New Testament polyglot edition of the Tregellis text. End of quote. Remember, last broadcast we talked about the polyglot editions, the different languages. And these polyglot editions made it possible to compare the text Receptus reading with some other Greek text reading, and it was the beginning of the doubt of the received text that underlies King James Bible. And Hort was the editor of the New Testament polyglot edition of Tregellis text, the critical text of Tregellis. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says, the influence of Tregellis was enormous. He was surpassed only by Titchendorf as a gatherer of manuscript citations. In this respect, Tregellis completely eclipsed Westcott and Hort, who, though long on theory, did not actually collate manuscripts or prepare a critical apparatus. End of quote. Very interesting to point this out. Bishop Westcott and Professor Hort, neither one of them collated manuscripts. They just simply mainly took manuscript B and followed it. They didn't have any footnote references. They didn't compare here and there. Certainly that was not done by that particular pair of Westcott and Hort, the team. Well, let me continue. Dr. Mormon says he was invited to serve on the revision committee, that is, of the English Revised Version of 1881, but declined due to ill health. With respect to the emerging critical text, Tregellis was the primary authority in England. End of quote. In other words, there was nobody higher in this critical text, the false text, which we do not believe is the correct text. Tregellis was the leader in the whole country and nation of England. And just like Bishop Westcott and Professor Hort were leaders in this country, so Tregellis was in England. And this critical text differs, as we said last broadcast, from our text of Receptus that underlies our King James Bible, as Dr. Jack Mormon has indicated, differs over 8,000 places. In over 8,000 places, the Greek text of Nestle Island, 26-27, differs from the text that underlies our King James Bible. So they're widely divergent in their readings. Now, granted, some of the changes are more minor than others, but 8,000 plus documented over 500 large pages. You ought to get that research of Dr. Jack Mormon. It's published here by the Bible for today. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says it's of his influence, that is, of Tregellis' influence. Metzger, that is, Bruce Metzger, says this, quote, in England, the scholar who at the middle of the 19th century was most successful in drawing British preference away from the text Receptus was Samuel Prideaux Tregellis, end of quote. In other words, he's praised by Bruce Metzger, who's a Westcott and Hort man through and through, praised to the skies as the one who drew away the British preference from the text Receptus that underlies our King James Bible to the critical text, the false text. It's a sad thing indeed. Dr. Mormon continues, here's the man who more than any other gave an acceptable face to the critical text and eased the way for its acceptance in fundamentalism. He was the one, because he was a believer, because he was a Christian, people point to him and say, oh, he's saved, and therefore he must know what he's doing. And so let's accept the critical text. And that's what has happened in our country. That's what's happening in our world. And that's why the big four fundamental schools have all adopted the false Westcott and Hort, B and Aleph, Vatican and Sinai, Nestle Island, United Bible Society text, which are very similar, all of them, indeed. And these men have adopted it, and they've adopted it in these schools, and I'm talking about the big four fundamental schools, talking about Bob Jones University, Detroit Baptist Seminary, Calvary Baptist Seminary, Central Baptist Seminary. These are the big four. You can add to that certainly Northland Baptist Bible College, Maranatha Baptist Bible College, and many other so-called fundamentalist schools, but they've adopted the critical text. Dr. Mormon continues. Tregellis was a preacher, an evangelist, and a teacher of prophetic themes. Of this latter, Spurgeon remarked, quote, Tregellis is deservedly regarded as a great authority on prophetical subjects, end of quote. Well, that's interesting from Spurgeon. And then Dr. Mormon goes on, he was a defender of the faith and produced a Hebrew-English lexicon in the Old Testament in which he countered the German rationalism that had colored previous lexicons. End of quote. Well, that's a good thing for him to do. I'm glad that he did that. Dr. Mormon continues, he also rebuked the modernism of the Hebraist A.B. Davidson. In a speech delivered in 1856, he attacked the British and Foreign Bible Society for circulating Romish versions of the Scriptures, end of quote. Well, that is good. Tregellis, being a Bible-believing Christian, was right in chastising the modernism of the Hebrew scholar A.B. Davidson. He was correct and right in attacking the British and Foreign Bible Society for circulating Romish versions of the Bible. He's correct in that. Doesn't mean he's correct in the text that he adopted, but he was right in confronting unbelieving sources. Dr. Mormon continues, in matters such as these, Tregellis is a world apart from the other critical text editors. Yet, good men can be wrong, and his consuming ambition to produce a text based primarily upon B and a few other early manuscripts was a colossal blunder, and one that many followed. End of quote. Building a text on B, the Vatican manuscript, was a blunder, and many people followed his blunders, such as Westcott and Hort and others. Well, we come now to a new section, talking about Tregellis in the last section. Now the new section, the Trinitarian Bible Society wavers for a while. Now the Trinitarian Bible Society currently publishes only the King James Bible and publishes only the Textus Receptus that underlies that. It's Dr. Scribner's Greek New Testament that underlies our King James Bible. We're glad for that. And though it is not a separatist organization, Trinitarian Bible Society, although it does have ties in with the World Council of different churches that are in the World Council of Churches, though it's highly, very Calvinistic and almost hyper-Calvinistic, it does have generally a proper view, currently at least, of the Scriptures, both the Hebrew Old Testament text and the Greek New Testament text, and so we're glad for that presently. But this section shows how the Trinitarian Bible Society, TBS, wavered, at least for a while. Let me tell you what Dr. Jack Mormon writes about the Trinitarian Bible Society. Quote, founded in 1831, the Trinitarian Bible Society of London has long published and defended the authorized version and the received text. Its proud legacy has been the publication and distribution of many millions of copies of the authorized version and foreign language translation based on the received text. And then it says, its stated aim, here are the stated aims of the Trinitarian Bible Society currently. Quote, and by the way, Mrs. Wade and I, when we were visiting London on just a vacation a couple of years back, visited the Trinitarian Bible Society. We met with the different divisions and saw what they were doing there and so on. Here's the stated purpose, at least presently. Quote, the Society continues to publish the authorized King James Version only in the English language, as we believe it's still to be the most accurate and reliable version in English. Well, I'm glad for that. They still publish the King James Bible. That's the only one they publish. And they continue to state the purpose. Quote, the Society's aim is to publish non-English Bibles and New Testaments translated on the same basis as the Authorized Version from the Hebrew Masoretic Old Testament text and the Greek New Testament Textus Receptus New Testament. End of quote. Well, that's commendable. That's commendable. They want to produce translations and so on based on the right Hebrew and the right Greek text. So that's their purpose of the Trinitarian Bible Society. Let us continue now what Dr. Mormon says about that situation earlier in their history. He says, quote, yet even the TBS, Trinitarian Bible Society, wavered during the days when the Westcott and Hort juggernaut began to rumble across Europe. And in other words, they were not firm. They wanted to move. And they did move slightly, at least. Dr. Mormon continues. In the 1850s and 60s, the society experienced serious financial problems and on several occasions faced the threat of dissolution. In 1867, however, the Trinitarian Bible Society entered into an era of vigorous activity, growth, and prosperity. In that year, at the age of only 29, that's 29 years, the Reverend Ethelbert Bullinger was appointed secretary. So here's Ethelbert W. Bullinger. I know his middle initial is W. Bullinger. And appointed the secretary is only 29 years of age. Now notice, he was to remain at the helm of the society for 46 years till his death in 1913. And of course, now this is important because Bullinger, as we'll see as Dr. Mormon presents it, was very decidedly interested and influenced by the false Westcott critical text. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says this. Bullinger, an Anglican, which is Church of England, a premillenarian, dispensationalist, that is almost his hyper-dispensationalist, actually, a friend of the Jews, a Grand Master of the Orange Order, which we're against, of course, author of many books, and hymn tunes, is perhaps best known as the editor of the Companion Bible, There is much that is helpful and illuminating in this massive work, especially his structural outlines of the Bible. There are other aspects that have justly caused great concern and given rise to the epithet Bullingerism. But let's take a look and see some of these concerns for so-called Bullingerism because of what he believes. Here's a quotation, for example. Bullingerism encompass the following areas. Bullinger's stand against water baptism and the Lord's Supper. Now that's part of the, I might just pause there, that's part of the hyper-dispensational approach. And that's why I'm against some of these men that have written books recently, which are hyper-dispensational. I think of a book that was written on the Bible, rightly understood. I think it's too hyper-dispensational for my money at least, and yet that has been pushed on the radio and different things, different places. Bullinger's stand against water baptism and the Lord's Supper, then as not being intended for the church age. His views of death and what happens to the soul after death, end of quote. So these are some of the Bullinger problems that have been promulgated even today. Right, Dr. Mormon continues. As the Trinitarian Bible Society flourished under Bullinger's influential, if at times controversial leadership, we are especially interested as to how he guided the society with regard to the emerging critical text. Here he was greatly influenced by his friend S.P. Tregellis. End of quote. Let's pause right there. So here is a man, Tregellis, Bible-believing, Plymouth Brethren, from England, who is a friend of Ethelbert W. Bullinger, who is the head, even at the age 29, the head of the Trinitarian Bible Society. And that friendship is what influenced Bullinger, the friendship of Tregellis, as far as the text is concerned. All right, here's what Andrew Brown explained. Andrew Brown was a former assistant there, one of the men that worked in the Trinitarian Bible Society. His father, Terence Brown, used to be the general secretary for many years. But Andrew Brown writes this. Quote, the society did not adopt any formal policy towards the revised version of the English Bible during the period in which it was being prepared. Bullinger himself recognized that there was a need to revise the underlying Hebrew and Greek text in accordance with sound critical principles, and that there would consequently be a need to revise the English translation to conform with the revised Hebrew and Greek text. He was closely associated with Ginsberg, who was a leading member of the Committee for the Old Testament Revision. That's 1881 revision. And he approved of the Greek New Testament text edited by his friend S.P. Tregellis. So here is Bullinger, Ethelbert W. Bullinger, just a young man, 29, heading up the Trinitarian Bible Society. He was a friend and a pal of this man, Tregellis. And Tregellis was not right as far as the text that he used. He was not right. He was wrong. He used the critical text, and he hated and despised the Textus Receptus text. So he was a friend, and he agreed, the Bullinger did, the Trinitarian Bible Society, with the views of Tregellis. Let me continue. Andrew Brown says this of Bullinger, quote, Bullinger did not commit the Society to any definite policy on this question, but it is clear that a few of the versions produced by the Society at this period were based on a revised form of Greek New Testament text. End of quote. Let me pause right there. Now, I got a hold of some of these texts of the Trinitarian Bible Society, 10 or 15 years ago, when Terence Brown was the General Secretary. And it was a New Testament, and it was a New Testament in the Hebrew language. They produced a Hebrew New Testament. And when I came into the doubtful passages that Westcott and Hort wanted to eliminate or change drastically, I noted in this Hebrew New Testament from the Trinitarian Bible Society that they had used a corrupted text. There was a question, for example, in Mark 16, 9 to 20. It shouldn't be there. It was bracketed. There's a question also, in, for example, in 1 Timothy 3:16, great is the mystery of godliness. God was manifest in the flesh. That's the text reception, but they say, who was manifest, or he was manifest, or he who was manifested in the flesh. And they gave the false text of the critical text rather than saying he who was this. They just said instead of God was manifest in the flesh. So it was a terrible shock to me to see this. But here they are admitting that in the early days, they followed some translations that were based on the false Westcott and Hort text of Tregellis. And to continue, Andrew Brown continues, he says, Bullinger himself was responsible for revising the Greek text underlying the second edition of Salkinson's Hebrew version of the New Testament, whose text thus came to resemble that of Tregellis. Now, that's why the New Testament, Hebrew edition of the New Testament, was based upon the false text. That's why I could find these bracketed words and changes as I read my copy. Andrew Brown continues. Articles printed in the Society's Quarterly Record, however, gradually became more critical of the revised version of the English Bible. In October 1898, the British and Foreign Bible Society was criticized for proposing to adopt the revised version. And it was noted in October of 1901 that people were transferring support from the British and Foreign Bible Society to the Trinitarian Bible Society as a result. So, and of course, that was wrong to do that, to adopt that particular form. Well, time's up for now. Remember the words of our Lord Jesus Christ in John 10:9. He said, I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he should be saved, and shall go in and out, and find pasture. Write us. Bible for Today, Collinsville, New Jersey. Call us on the order phone, 1-800-JOHN-10-9. Ask your bookstore for Defending King James Bible, and the Defined King James Bible, or call 1-800-JOHN-10-9. Dr. D.A. Waite, signing off and reminding you, you can have confidence in the King James Bible, because the King James Bible is the Bible for today. We're going to continue this booklet. I hope you'll send for it, free and postpaid, $5 value. It's a short little booklet, not too many pages, probably 12 pages in all. Samuel Tregellis, the man who made the critical text acceptable to Bible believers. $5 value, free and postpaid upon request. We're going to continue this. Tregellis, remember, was the one that caused fundamentalists of this age in which we live, basically, to switch from the Textus Receptus to go to the false text of Westcott and Hort, United Bible Society text, Nesselallen text, and the other critical texts of B, the Vatican, and Aleph, the Sinai manuscripts. And we are against that text. We're for the text for Cephas and a King James Bible. We're going to continue next broadcast. We hope you'll stay tuned. Until then, we'll see you same time, same station, next week. Until then, so long. We now present the Bible for Today of the Air, heard each week at the same time and over the same station, sponsored by the Bible for Today Incorporated and the Dean Burgot Society, with International Studios at 900 Park Avenue, Collingswood, New Jersey. This is Dr. D.A. Waite, Director of the Bible for Today, speaking. Welcome to weekly broadcast number 892. 892 weeks of weekly broadcasting, standing together with the Dean Burgot Society in defense of traditional Bible texts, including the traditional Masoretic Hebrew Old Testament text, the traditional received Greek New Testament text, and the traditional English text, the King James Bible. We're building Bible confidence. Confidence in the King James Bible because the King James Bible is the Bible for today. The order phone number is 1-800-JOHN-10-9. For other things, please call us on the question and answer phone, 856-854-4452. Or our listeners, if they wish, including our shortwave listeners all over the world, can email us, bft@biblefortoday.org. And you can also get our website, biblefortoday.org. We'd like to hear from you. We'd like you to get our book called Defending the King James Bible. Now in its ninth printing, 350 pages, hardback edition. Why don't you ask your bookstore to get Defending the King James Bible, or call us at 1-800-JOHN-10-9. Then have you ordered your defined King James Bible, published for the Bible for Today? Uncommon words in the King James are defined accurately in the footnotes. It's deluxe. Genuine leather, choice of 12-point large print, 10-point medium print, not another Bible in the world like it. 51,000 are in print and distributed worldwide. Why not order yourself a copy and one for your friends? The defined King James Bible. Well, we're continuing this week, as last week, on Samuel Tregellis. This booklet, The Man Who Gave and Who Made the Critical Text Acceptable to Bible Believers. It's written by Dr. Jack Mormon. He's a missionary of our church, the Bible for Today Baptist Church, in London, England. A great scholar in the Greek areas. He made many books, some 5 books on textual criticism in one kind or another. He's written this wonderful little booklet, $5 value, including postage, yours for the asking. Tregellis, The Man Who Made the Critical Text Acceptable to Bible Believers. Free and postpaid upon request. All right, we're on page number 8 in this booklet, and we're talking about the Trinitarian Bible Society there in London, England, and how it wavered for a while in regard to the critical text versus the text receptus. And because they appointed Ethelbert W. Bullinger at age 29 to be their general secretary, he was for 46 years until he died in 1913, when this Greek text of Westcott and Hort came out in 1881, he was adversely influenced. And even before that text, he was influenced adversely from Tregellis. Samuel Tregellis influenced Bullinger in a wrong way. And now we've been quoting from a former assistant, and Andrew Brown, assistant of the Trinitarian Bible Society, a former worker, an official, and he's saying this concerning the Trinitarian Bible Society and Bullinger, the general secretary. He says this, quote, in 1906, Bullinger opposed the British and Foreign Bible Society for printing the Nestle Greek text, believing the F.H.A. Scrivener's edition of the received text, which was circulated by the Trinitarian Bible Society, were preferable. He seems to have felt that it was not right to abandon the old received text as the standard form of the Greek New Testament. In 1907 and 1908, further critiques of the revised version by Compton appeared in the Quarterly Record, drawing heavily upon the works of Dean Burgon, especially Burgon's The Revision Revised, 1883. Andrew Brown continues. The tercentenary of the authorized version, 1611, gave the Society an opportunity to reaffirm its confidence in the old translation. The translator's preface of the AV, Authorized Version, was reprinted to mark the occasion, and a Bible was presented to King George V, end of quote. So that gives us the statement of Andrew Brown, a former employee of the Transatlantic Bible Society, as to its past performance with Bullinger and its present stand on the Text Receptus and the King James Bible. I might just add this and say that Andrew Brown, being the son of Terence Brown, who was the General Secretary, at one time was trying to make a move for the Trinitarian Bible Society to accept the new King James Version and to print it. It was blocked, fortunately, by the trustees. They didn't do it. Furthermore, Andrew Brown was writing a number of other critical articles, critical somewhat of the Text of Receptus and the King James Bible, and he was, it seemed to me, drifting toward possibly either the majority text or possibly even the critical text of Westcott and Hort. And so when they made, the board made Andrew Brown go, they fired him, actually. His father, Terence Brown, also resigned, sort of angry, because his son, Andrew, had to leave the Trinitarian Bible Society. So that's the background, briefly, up to date as we know it. Presently, Trinitarian Bible Society is operating on a safe course, at least. We hope it'll continue to be safe with the King James Bible, the only Bible in the English language that's printed, and also with the the other things that they agree to, the Text Receptus in the New Testament words and the Masoretic Text in the Old Testament words. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says this. We're on page number 8 now. Quote, the influence of Tregellis upon Bullinger caused this key publisher and promoter of the Authorized Version and the Text Receptus to waver for a time. Caused him to waver. Notwithstanding some of Brown's comments above, that is Andrew Brown, we can be thankful that more damage was not done, especially in light of Bullinger's statements in the Companion Bible, a work completed not long before his death, under a section entitled The Modern Critical Text, Appendix 94. He writes, so now Dr. Mormon is going to quote for us what this man, Bullinger, believed about the critical text. He writes this, that is, the man, Modern Greek Text, Bullinger himself writes this, quote, Tregellis produced his text in principles which were substantially the same as Lachman, but he admits the evidence of Unshiel manuscripts down to the 7th century and includes a careful testing of a wide circle of other authorities. The chief value of his text lies not only in this, but in his scrupulous fidelity and accuracy, and it is probably the best and most exact presentation of the original text ever published. End of quote. Let me pause right there. So here's what Bullinger's real beliefs were in regard to the critical text. Now, granted, his views apparently didn't come too strongly into the Trinitarian Bible Society, but here he was for 46 years, the General Secretary, who was loving the wrong text of Scripture, the text that was not the basis of the King James Bible. Let me continue. Bullinger also wrote this in the Modern Critical Text, Appendix 94. He says this, quote, Westcott and Hort, in this text, the classification of manuscripts into families is revived with greater elaboration than that of Griesbach. It is prepared with the greatest care and at present holds a place equal in estimation to that of Tregellis. End of quote. Let me pause right there also. See, this is in the Companion Bible that was written and edited by Ethelbert W. Bullinger. The Bullinger who's hyper-dispensational and other things we don't agree with. And certainly this Companion Bible statement, we don't agree with that either, where he praises Tregellis, and then he praises Westcott and Hort. And he says that at present holds a place equal in estimation to that of Tregellis. Well, both Tregellis texts and Westcott and Hort texts are of the worst that ever saw the light of day, because they follow Manuscript B, the Vatican Manuscript, and sometimes Manuscript Aleph as well. So Bullinger was way off base on the text that underlies our King James Bible. All right, Dr. Mormon continues. He says this, quote, thankfully, the Trinitarian Bible Society was able to get back on track, or as Brown said, quote, the society had drawn back from this precipice, end of quote. Few, however, in the rest of the Bible-believing world were aware that there was a precipice. His point right there is pause right there, end of quote. There's a precipice. Now, a precipice is a place high up which if a man or woman, boy or girl, goes over, he falls to his death or serious injury. Now, this precipice is a good word, and Andrew Brown used it. It is a very descriptive word. And then Dr. Mormon says, few, however, in the rest of the Bible-believing world, were even aware that there was a precipice. In other words, when you change and you switch from the Textus Receptus that underlies our King James Bible, and you move it over into the critical text of Westcott and Hort, or Tregellis, or B. and Aleph, or Vatican and Sinai, or the United Bible Society, or Nestle, call it what you will. When you move into that critical text, you leap into a precipice, a deadly, injurious precipice. That text has 8,000 differences from the text underlying our King James Bible. That text, the critical text, as Dr. Mormon has pointed out, has 356 doctrinal passages that are in error. 356 serious errors. That's a precipice that people fall into without even knowing it, perhaps, and are injured thereby. The sad fact is many of the Bible-believing Christians, as Dr. Mormon says, don't even know there was such a precipice or there is a precipice. They don't care. They're sound asleep. They think these new modern versions that are based on the false Greek text of Westcott and Hort and Tregellis and others, they think these new versions are all right, no problem. My friend, there's a precipice in these new versions. NIV, New American Standard, English Standard Version that's now being pushed by Bob Jones University, for example. There's a precipice involved in every one of these new versions. And the precipice is simply there are 8,000 differences in the text underlying them, with the text underlying our King James Bible, and also there are 356 doctrinal perversions and passages in these new versions, which are seriously unbelieving and seriously doctrinally imperfect. We continue. Dr. Mormon says, Dean John William Burgon's warnings were heard and heeded by the Trinitarian Bible Society, but at that time by few others. End of quote. And so at least the works of Dean Burgon were heeded by the Trinitarian Bible Society, and I've been heeding that warning as well. As you know, the Dean Burgon Society has a name that takes Dean John William Burgon's name. It's a 26-year-old society. I've been president of it for 26 years now. And this society stands for Dean Burgon's warnings on this precipice, and stands for the traditional text that underlies our King James Bible and for the King James Bible as well. We have reproduced, as the Dean Burgon Society has reproduced, some five different volumes of Dean Burgon's work. We started with the last 12 verses of Mark, and then we went on to the Revision Revised, and then the traditional text, and then the causes of corruption of that traditional text, and then finally, Inspiration and Interpretation. These are excellent books, and they are standing firm for the traditional texts and the King James Bible as well. Let us move on to another section here, another section called the Single Sheet of Paper Philosophy. You say, what does that mean? The Single Sheet of Paper Philosophy. Well, what that's going to mean is this. People who push the critical text say that there's very little difference between the critical text and the Textus Receptus that underlies our King James Bible. In fact, they say the differences can be placed on a single sheet of paper. This is so absurd and so wrong and so deadly and so vicious an error. It's unquestionably the thing that has caused many people to say, well, what's the difference? If only a single sheet of paper contains the differences in these two texts, why just accept both of them as equal? No, let's go ahead and see what Dr. Mormon writes in this section of his book, Tregellis, The Man Who Made the Critical Text Acceptable to Bible Believers. Dr. Mormon says, quote, those not guided by Bergon's warnings and research found themselves following another principle. Speaking of the revised Greek text, F.J.A. Hort claimed that, quote, the amount of what can in any way or any sense be called substantial variation is but a small fraction of the whole residuary variation and can hardly form more than a thousandth part of the entire text, end of quote. That's from Hort's New Testament Introduction, 1882. He says, in other words, the amount of residual variation can hardly form more than a thousandth part of the entire text. Now, since Hort's day, many have latched onto that and made the further claim that these influences or differences could be contained on one page. The thousandth part is simply one page. And that's why this next quote, for example, is given. And this is a quote from Mark Minnick, who's a teacher and a professor at Bob Jones University, a graduate of Bob Jones University, and a pastor right there at Mount Calvary Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Here's what he says, quote, to put this thousandth part of the entire text into perspective, I'm looking at the last page of my Greek New Testament. It is numbered 895. Hort's estimate, even though it's a wrong estimate, Hort's estimate means that if all of the substantial variation between the families was grouped together in one place, it would combine to occupy less than one page of my entire Testament. End of quote. My friend, substantial variation, what is that? That means the things that Westcott and Hort were still wondering about. But we don't accept the things that Westcott and Hort agreed upon. We who stand for the received text and underlies our King James Bible don't accept any of Hort's so-called variations. We say all the variations are important. And that's why Dr. Jack Mormon has written this large page, over 500 large pages, that lists, starting with Matthew 1:1 and right on down the line, that lists over 8,000 plus differences between the Nestle-Aulin 26-27 edition and the received text that underlies our King James Bible. And to say you can put that all on one page, how was it that Dr. Mormon took 500 large pages? Talk about less than half a page, around one page of his testament, Mark Minnick. Why, Mark 16:9-20, the last 12 verses of Mark, would take up more than one page. And also, how about the woman taken in adultery? There's 12 verses there also. John 7:53-8:11. And that would certainly take up more than half a page. So this is absolutely ridiculous and false. Dr. Mormon says the following. Quote, we wonder if those making and repeating this claim really mean to be taken seriously. It is indeed the very opposite. Nevertheless, as the following example shows, this idea that the nature and number of the differences are small caught hold in fundamentalism. For many, the waving of this single sheet of paper settled the issue. Waving a single sheet of paper settled the issue. And so he says that there are others that this is a very opposite situation. There are many more than just a half a sheet of paper. That's what they're saying in these modern days, and I mean even by fundamentalists. Mark Minnick is a fundamentalist. He's, a teacher at Bob Jones University, and these men are saying less than half a page, or certainly less than a page. Well, let's go on to the next section of this book, Tregellis, the man who made the critical text acceptable to Bible believers. And that section is the Schofield Bible on the critical text. Now, I use my Schofield reference Bible. I've used it all of my Christian life. And there's nothing wrong with the dispensationalism. I'm a dispensationalist. I'm premillennial and so on. But there are some things in the Schofield Bible that I certainly cannot agree with. And one of them is, one of the things is the notes. One are the notes. It's hard to figure that one out. Part of the things I disagree with are the notes. How about that? That dealt not the notes of the dispensationalism, but the notes that deal with the text. I cannot agree with that because he's based upon Westcott and Hort's Greek text. Schofield was smitten with Westcott and Hort and the false critical text. Let me see what he says about the Scofield Bible and the critical text. Dr. Mormon says this, quote, back in 1991, while passing out tracts on the second coming of Christ in the center of Oxford, England, a very aged man, likely to be into his 90s, came up and related how that C.I. Scofield had spent a considerable time in the city preparing his study Bible. The Scofield Bible has played an enormous role in the development of dispensational fundamentalism. It has been a great blessing and help to many, not only in those areas for which it is best known, but also in the practical help it gives to living the Christian life. While we will take issue with a few of those notes, generally they are sound and convey a kind of distilled spirituality that is not met with in other annotated Bibles. Nevertheless, says Dr. Mormon, like the companion Bible of Bullinger, this too makes numerous references to the alternative readings of the Aleph and B text, the B and Aleph Vatican Sinai text, the critical text of Westcott and Hort. Scofield's brief statement on this matter, as Dr. Mormon continues, given in the introduction to his study Bible, should be carefully noted, for it expresses precisely the position fundamentalism was to take during much of the 20th century. End of quote. Now, I've noticed this in the Scofield Bible, the old Scofield Bible, dated 1917. See, that was after 1881, when the English Revised Version came out and the Westcott and Hort Greek text came out. And so this was a definite position at that time. And this, he was completely swept off his feet, Scofield was, C.S. Scofield, with the Westcott and Hort Greek text. Here's what he says in his book, in the preface, quote, Scofield says, quote, after mature reflection, it was determined to use the authorized version. None of the many revisions have commended themselves to the people at large. The revised version, which has now been before the public for 27 years, gives no indication of becoming, in any general sense, the people's Bible of the English-speaking world. The discovery of the Sinaitic manuscript, that's Aleph, and the labors in the field of textual criticism with such scholars as Griesbach, Lachmann, Tichendorf, Tregelis, Wiener, Alford, and Westcott and Hort have cleared the Greek text receptus of minor inaccuracies while confirming to a remarkable degree the general accuracy of the authorized version of that text. End quote. Let me pause right there. What he's saying here is that all these unbelievers, Griesbach, Tichendorf, Lachmann, now Tregelis was a believer, but Wiener and Alford and Westcott and Hort, all these people are pushing him into accepting the Westcott and Hort false critical text. And to continue what Scofield says in his preface, quote, such emendations of the text as scholarship demands have been placed in the margin of this edition, which therefore combines the dignity, the high religious value, the tender associations of the past, the literary beauty and remarkable general accuracy of the authorized version with the results of the best textual scholarship, end of quote. My friend, it's the worst textual scholarship to change the text receptus in favor of the Westcott and Hort Greek text. It's fallacious and false, and it's nothing to do with what this man should have done and put in his Bible. And so every time I encourage people to get the Westcott and Hort, rather the Old Scofield Reference Bible, not the new, but the Old Scofield Reference Bible, for its dispensationalism, for its notes, for its premillennialism and other things, I always warn, do not take any of the textual changes that that Scofield mentions in his margins, especially that center margin. Never take any of it, because he questions the textual receptus on many, many places. So he was influenced adversely, sad to say. Let me continue. Dr. Mormon says this is a classic example of the single sheet of paper philosophy. Scofield's statement was influential and was to summarize the attitude of many of the leaders in fundamentalism. Few took the time to make a serious inquiry. Let us see the research that a Scofield, a James Gray, or William Newell, or Harry Ironside, or Bob Jones Sr. produced on the text issue. End of quote. These fellows never looked into the textual issue. They never read Dean Burgon's books. They never studied and peered into the thing and probed. They just took it on face value. Dr. Mormon says there is none. No research. Any of these men, Schofield, Gray, William Newell, Harry Ironside, Bob Jones Sr. Thus, to quote the scattered statements these leaders made in favor of the revised text, counts for nothing. And then Dr. Mormon says this, four crucial errors are apparent in Schofield's Bible statement. Number one, Schofield speaks approvingly of Griesbach, Lachman, Ditzendorf, Tregelis, Wiener, Alford, and Westcott and Hort. With the exception of Tregelis and perhaps Alford, all were a part of the rationalism sweeping Europe. Fundamentalism was to follow this misuse of the term, quote, the best textual scholarship. That's a false term in itself. Number two, by mentioning these eight men, the impression may be given that they all worked from an independent approach as to the kind of text they would produce. In fact, as they all ignored the great mass of manuscripts and relied instead upon a very few early manuscripts, they each produced what was essentially an Aleph and B text, the Vatican Sinai text. Number three, neither in intent or result did they clear the text receptus of minor inaccuracies. Thus, there was nothing minor about it. Their texts were a radical departure from the text receptus. They wanted the text receptus overthrown, not revised. Point number four. Schofield wrongly imagined that the authorized version could be used alongside this best textual scholarship with this Aleph and B text. He completely understated the enormity of divergence between them. As Dr. Mormon has stated, over 500 pages, large pages, over 8,000 differences between these texts. And we continue. Dr. Mormon says, others, of course, played an important role. The two Princeton scholars, Charles Hards and Benjamin Warfield, are known to have been a chief influence in bringing the critical text into the high church circles of America. This was, to also have an effect upon dispensational fundamentalism. There's a mention here of James Seidler. He notes some things. Be remembered the Niagara Creed of 1878 adopted the Niagara Conference on Prophecy, which was dominated by a coalition of Princeton graduates and followers of J.N. Darby, may well have been the first document to claim inspiration for every word of Scripture, provided such word is found in the original manuscripts. End of quote. Well, we've concluded this, my friends. I want you to get a copy of it if you wish. Samuel Tregelis, the man who made the critical text acceptable to Bible believers. Time's up for now. Remember the words of our Lord Jesus Christ in John 10:9. He said, I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved and shall go in and out and find pasture. Write us. Bible for today, Collinswood, New Jersey. Call us on the order phone, 1-800-JOHN-10-9. Ask your bookstore for Defending the King James Bible and the Defined King James Bible, or call 1-800-JOHN-10-9. Dr. D.A. Waite, signing off and reminding you, you're going to have confidence in the King James Bible because the King James Bible is the Bible for today. We're going to take a new subject next week. We're going to still stay with Dr. Jack Mormon, an excellent author. We're going to take one of his books, Missing in Modern Versions. We're going to see something happening in this critical text issue. Tregelis has finished, but write us for it. It's free and postpaid, a $5 value. Samuel Tregelis, the man who made the critical text acceptable to Bible believers. 1-800-JOHN-10-9. See you next week, same time, same station. Until then, so long.